us, Cor says, and we've got to take it out. Lee sets down the coin. You think Annie will be let off? D'Lo weighs his answer. It's hard to say. As I left, a stir was created by the arrest of a reporter covering the trial. Not Megara again, says Cor. I don't... Maybe? Cor groans into his hands. Lee's gaze is fixed on D'Lo. But you think public opinion has shifted? D'Lo frowns, hesitates, and lifts a shoulder. I think she has a chance.
Lee. A chance. A chance, and I'm grounded, no way of helping her, about to send the fleet I've trained into the night to wait and hear the outcome like a restless child. A chance. With Cor and Krissa, I help the remaining riders suit up and arm in the lairs. We have a final briefing where I go over the attack plan and the fallback options. If Obazuth launches before you successfully bind her, target Freyda. You'll know how to time it depending on the trial verdict. A tether target, homing in on the Goliathan's rider, was historically difficult in the Basileian Wars, which were mainly conducted at sea. Locating the host ship of the tethering rider was a challenge in itself. But this time around, we'll know exactly where the Goliathan's tether is. I pity Freyda, but if it comes down to it, she can't be spared out of pity. How close does Ayla need to be for Antigone to summon her? D'Lo asks. He'll prepare the way for our arrival. Their arrival, I correct myself. It hits me again. They'll go over and I'll stay here, grounded. Get her into the Firemouth. That should be close enough. I hardly hear myself. One by one, they leap into the night, giddy for their mission, leaving the lairs empty with a terrible silence in their wake. Until the only dragon left is Ayla. You need to go with them. Go on. I lay a tentative palm on her burning scales and think of Annie, probing the connection we shouldn't be able to share. Ayla snorts and shudders, resisting. She needs you. In answer, she gently takes my hand into her mouth and tugs it. Her fangs are retracted, but her breath is still hot enough to burn. I yank my smarting fingers free. What? She luxuriates in a stretch backward and then forward, rippling her crest, and lowers herself to mounting height. She cocks her head at me. No, I say, as I understand. She quivers her crest with determination. Ayla, it's done for me. She nips again at my hand, gently with her gums, her amber eye fixed on me, and the sense of it comes as clearly as thoughts once shared with Palor. Come with me. So I do. We're not used to each other. I've sat on Ayla's back once before in extraordinary circumstances, when I climbed behind Annie on Ayla's back midair to help them. But then it was only for a minute or so, and Palor and Annie were there to stabilize us both. A flight across the sea on someone else's dragon is something else. Our stuttering connection is no substitute for the true bond between a rider and their dragon. I'm as ill as a green rider on his first flight on Dragonback. It doesn't help that Ayla has a habit of twitching, as if, in moments of forgetfulness, her impulse were to buck this unfamiliar weight off her back. The Skysung Queen glossed over these details, I mutter. When I'm not concentrating on holding in my last meal or reminding Ayla not to throw me, my head's full of eggs, Ayla's eggs, swimming across my vision. She's jamming them into our faltering connection more rudely and insistently than Palor ever shared anything. And then I realize we're drifting west, despite my heel in her side nudging us south. She's taking the opportunity of our flight to steer us back towards Farhall. Not the damn eggs, Annie! We have to go to Annie! Ayla's anger pulsates like a shockwave. I feel her indignation, her heartbreak. Her incomprehension that Annie sent her away. She had to do it. It hurt her too. We keep drifting toward the highlands, though Ayla's slowed. She's completely ignoring the heel I'm digging into her right flank. If I didn't know better, I'd think at this point she's toying with me. Finally, I grind out a bargain. I'll take care of the eggs, okay? But Annie first. The images flicker and fade, and Ayla's wings soften beneath me. For the first time since I lost Palor, the tight aching in my chest loosens. I reach down to rub her flank, and when I open my eyes, I find the Ferrish plain spread below. The storm has cleared, leaving visibility for miles in its wake. We've already passed the blockade, dwindling to toy-sized boats along the Calipolan coastline. Ayla allows me to steer her toward the capital. We follow the other dragons and their riders down to the cedar grove at Paran's Spring, where Dilo Skyfish waits by a gated drainage pipe. The resistance riders will stake out with civilian clothes over their flame suits to wait for the trial verdict, while their dragons wait here for their summons. Ayla herself will be snuck into the Firemouth through the drainage tunnel by Dilo, bypassing the security they've added to the main entrances. Whispers erupt in the darkness around us as Ayla lands, and they realize she bears a rider. Is that Lee? Can he do that? Looks like he did. I spot a glint of golden hair and pull Krissa aside. I'll find you and Kor in a few hours. But where are you? I'm going to try something profoundly stupid. The plan's been forming as I flew, and now it's as clear as dragon glass, even if it might be half mad. The fragment of poetry reverberates in my ears. Sing me now your fury song. I remember when we thought it'd be like this, Annie said, heroic, full of purpose. Maybe we are like this and we just don't know it. I set off as fast as two saddle sore legs can carry me for the rain-soaked foothills of Pytho's keep known as the Janiculum. A half hour later, I'm knocking on the front door of the poet laureate of Calipolis. A skyfish curled on the gravel drive perks up at the sight of me. Hello, Lee, says Lotus, opening the door. What brings you back from the dead? I step inside without waiting for the invitation. I need to speak to your dad. I got to know Lo Tiran, working with him this winter, when the secret printing press in his basement was critical to the Passy's reform efforts. But it was poetry, not journalism, that led the Tirans to conspire with the Dragonborn. Having never known the same kind of cruelty that the Lowborn experienced under triarchal rule, they were seduced with the promise of literary freedom. Tonight I find the senior Tiran thinner and greyer than I remember. Though Lotus wears a flame suit, he has unpinned the clover that should be on his lapel. When I ask about Mrs. Tiran, the men only look at each other. The parlor has the overcluttered look of a bachelor residence. They've seated me between stacks of books on the main sofa. Lotus hesitates. Mother's loyalty was questioned. Is she imprisoned or dead? Her confinement issued as a warning, her punishment a threat? I know this is my opening. I think it's time we discuss other horses to back. Tiran stirs, his eyes lightless, but they lift to mine. Go on, he says. Antigone's jury goes into conclave in the morning. I've heard she has a chance. I want her to have more than that. Lotus turns away to draw the curtains. Tiran shakes his head. He looks almost pitying. Lee, there's no point. There's nothing more to say. The people know the truth. With the coverage Megara's been giving, Antigone's got more sympathy now than I think she's ever had. But there's a difference between knowing the truth and being willing to die for it. Exactly. Then it sounds like we should inspire them. We've got a poet laureate to advise, a rogue printing press in the basement, and a dragon for distribution. Lo Tiran once complained about a commission to glorify a revolution he couldn't believe in. But what about a commission for something he can? Because he's right, journalism is no longer what's needed. Tiran snorts, catching my drift. Then he realizes I'm not laughing. No, he says, there's no time. But I'm already smiling. I thought the Passy did some of its best work on a Dawn deadline.
38. Vox Draconis. Annie. Callipolis. The night they arrest Megara, I have the dream again. I'm an adult. Lee is there. And there is so much life around us. Swimming, dazzling life. I know, in the way you can know your whole alternate history in a dream, that this is a different future that led from a different past. A past where Lee and I met as children, yes, when we were alone and sad. But one in which we are never plucked from that life into something larger. We moved on, small sadness to small joys, until we were grown and our joys overflowed as they entwined. No dragons, only feet on the earth. A life we never had to sacrifice, that no one tried to take from us. I wake from that dream as the air is smashed from my lungs. Ixion's fist slams into my gut, his fingers twist my hair. Morning light filters down, diffused from the cell's high window, and glows on his shaking arms as they pin me to the ground. It won't change anything, he says. I don't know what you're talking about. His fingers close around my throat. Liar. And you know what I have to say about it. Wishful thinking. Let go of her. Power's voice somewhere to my left. Ixion ignores him. You wish you were this. But I saw you. I know what you are. The fingers tighten. I'm wheezing. What is he talking about? There is a thump, a rasp, and the air returns suddenly to my lungs. Power and Ixion roll across the floor. Guards spill into the cell. Two pull Power off Ixion, twisting his arms behind his back and hauling him upright. Power is dry heaving. Ixion holds up a ragged sheet of paper that looks like a Passy printing. Then kneels beside me and seizes the back of my head. Tell me how you did it. I don't know what you're... Liar! Who were you in contact with? No one. A boot into my gut. Another. I cough onto the stones. Something in my side cracks. Fingers grip my hair and slam my forehead again. Stars explode in my darkened vision. Power's voice strains behind me. Freyda told you not to touch her. The fists stop raining down. The hands release me. I roll onto all fours and hear boot steps on stone. Look at me, Antigone. Ixion's knife is at Power's chest. And Power has frozen. A guard has seized the back of my dress and yanked it to make sure I'm watching. I taste blood. Who is responsible for the printing? I swear to the long-dead gods I don't know. I'll count, Antigone. Three. Forgive me, my lord, for my indiscretions, which were not intended in faithlessness. I am shouting the plea. Palms on the ground like my father taught me, knowing all the while it will not be enough. Ixion's knife remains flush against Power's heart. I recite it anyway. Two. Grant that my punishment duly owed not be given to my loved ones blameless. Don't waste your breath, Annie, Power shouts. One. The knife slides into Power's chest. He draws a rattling breath. When the guard releases him, he falls to his knees. Ixion stoops over me, pulls my head back by the hair, and wipes Power's blood across my face. They may try to paint you as a hero,
But we all know you're just a pleading peasant bitch like your mother before you. He releases me, and I slump. Lucian Orthos's nasal palace standard comes from the doorway. My lord, you're needed in the throne room. When the cell door slams, for a moment the only sound is my sobs and Power's wheezing breath. I crawl forward, fingers finding the warm pool that grows at Power's knees, fumbling toward him in the dark. My fingers connect with the printing that Ixion has discarded at our feet, and I brush it aside. I find Power's wound and press against the opening, but the blood wells, too fast and too thick, seeping down his torso.
Hey, says Power, reaching out to touch my face. Stop doing that.
His old bantering tone is at odds with his sharp breaths. Faltering fingers fumble for the paper I'd dropped.
Read it, he says.
What?
Read it to me.
The last thing I want to do right now is read the stupid thing. But Power's fingers are tight on mine, his blood hot on my hands, and so I thrust the printing into the single square of light made by the sun through the high window. It's a poem. Signed Vox Draconis, like the fragment Lee and I found in his manor, and styled as that one was, like the canonized Aurelian cycle. But this one is in Kalish. Sing to me, muse of the revolution's daughter, who after Uriel Sir Aaron, after Pytho, after the triarchs, of old ages and the corruption of their reign, came low-born to defy them, who was expelled from her home, fell from all grace, and rose on a dragon's wings. It goes on, barely 100 lines. Power's breathing is shallow and careful, his fingers tight round my arm as I read it through. By the end, when I look up, I make out his smile.
That's the kind of poem I can get behind, he says.
Tears are running freely down my face. Though signed Vox Draconis, it's not enough to hide him, peeking through the forceful Kalish to render Dragon Tongue's wordy intricacy, changing his mother tongue to mine like an offering, sending courage across the distance in the one way he has left to meet us on our wing. His voice sends shivers through me like the touch of his fingers on my skin. Lee is out there, somewhere, alive. But I am kneeling, holding another boy, whose life is bleeding out. Power, please. I don't know what I'm pleading for, because no help is coming, and his blood soaks us both. I press my hands desperately against the wound. It's no wider than a boot knife's blade, but too close to the heart. Power lifts his fist to his chest in the revolutionary salute, and then he reaches out to clasp my hand. Cold metal presses into it.
Time, I return this.
I look down at the first rider's badge that I left in his keeping when I went to Norcia.
It's been an honor, Commander.
At the gesture, I feel as if my heart has been torn open and apart. And with the force of the rupture, the surge of another heart finding mine across the chasm, I can feel Ayla. Power's chin lowers to his chest.
The guard finds me curled around him, lips against his forehead, the medal clutched bloody in my hand. When I hear my name, I get to my feet. 39. The verdict. Annie. Miranda Hayne makes a hurried explanation as she escorts me to the throne room. The printing was disseminated on Dragonback before dawn, the same way the Passy distributed the People's Paper when they first took control of it. Still warm with Power's blood, and my own pulsing with strangled fury, I let her words wash over me, hardly hearing them. I suspect Tyrion, though to my knowledge he's never composed in Kalish. He must have had a translator. There's a version in Dragon Tongue too, distributed on the Janiculum and in Scholar's Row. They certainly appealed to both sides of the river and... Antigone, why are you covered in blood? As we enter the lantern-lit main corridor leading to the throne room, Miranda discerns my appearance at last. I look down at my bald and bloodied fists. It's Powers. She has stopped cold. Where is he? Is he? Not trusting myself to speak, I shake my head. We have arrived at the heavy engraved doors. This is where I leave her. Miranda seizes my arm, heedless of the blood that sticks to her palm, and I look up at her. Antigone? Her chin has set, and her brown eyes blaze. Go show them what you're made of. I lift a shaking fist to my chest in the revolutionary salute. Inside the anteroom, I step in front of a floor-length mirror, tuck my unbrushed hair behind my ears, straighten my shoulders, and lift the sleeve of my dress to wipe the blood from my face and hands. I take in a single breath. Power is beyond my help. It's time for me to go through that door. It's time to finish what we started. It's been an honor, Commander. Sing to me, muse of the revolution's daughter. I can feel Ayla's blood in my blood, her fire in my lungs. My arms are her wings itching for flight. She's so close. Alive, as I am, with anticipation. How could I ever have imagined a life without her? She and I are one. For the first time in weeks, I feel whole. I allow the guard to lead me into the room beyond. Ixion waits on the dais of the Triple Throne, in the principal chair. To one side sits Dilo Skyfish, the ascending Triarch of the East. The third chair that should be occupied by the Aurelian Triarch, in this case waiting for the underaged Astyanax, is occupied by Freyda. Silhouetted in one of the three glass archways behind them lounges Ixion's Storm Scourge, Nita. The court is arrayed on either side of the center aisle I walk down. The front two rows are empty, reserved for the jury in conclave. At the supplicant's stone, smoothed from years of obeisance, I kneel to await my fate. It seems we wait like this for an interminable time. Then a door creaks open to my right. There is the sound of 20 feet on stone. The jury files into its waiting rows.
Will the speaker for the jury step forward?
Samander Escross asks. The elderly man who told me to take heart rises to his feet. My heart speeds to twice its rate. The juror bows low before the triarchy, then straightens. His voice shakes, thick on vowels of an accent from Southside that stand in high contrast to the court's clipped palace standard.
To the charges of high treason and crimes against the state, the jury finds Antigone Sewer Ayler not guilty.
For a moment, I don't understand what I've heard. I'm not the only one confused by the verdict. Whispering erupts like wildfire through the hall. Ixion has blanched. Escross says,
"The Clover Tribunal hears its citizen jurors. Antigone Sewer Ayler is cleared of all charges."
I get to my feet. This isn't how it was supposed to go. I wanted to face Ixion in the arena after being found guilty. But now, on the other side of a verdict I hardly let myself imagine, I realize that there is still one way to face him in the arena. A way I'd written off, too full of guilt to contemplate. But that seems like a possibility for the first time since Kallipolis fell. I challenge Ixion Sewer Ayler to the title of First Rider. The whispering that lit the hall falls silent. Ixion's teeth bare.
"You and what dragon, Antigone?"
I smile at him. Right on cue, the glass of the central archway shatters. Ayler perches framed by stone, her wings spread. The thing must be done quickly if it is to be done at all. Grey Riders acting as criers, alight on dragon perches throughout the city to announce the tournament, like heralds of old. Citizens begin pouring across Highmarket Bridge, into the palace gardens, and through the arena gates. Ixion prepares in his apartments, while Ayler and I regroup to the cloister courtyard. There, I'm found by Vera and Vicky, caps askew, arms laden with bundles of guardian armour that look as though they've been gathering dust since the Restoration.
"Abby! Or I suppose it's Antigone, not Abigail now. We found these for you."
I'm startled by their identical beams. "You don't mind that I'm not who I said I was?" Last time we discussed politics, they were rather ill-disposed towards Atreus's bitch commander. Vicky waves a hand.
"When we found out we'd been maids alongside Antigone Sewer Ayler, on the run."
She presses a palm to her chest, lifting starstruck eyes to the cloudy sky.
"Let us know if there's anything else you need. We were told to outfit you."
I've done a cursory pass over the flame suit and confirmed what I expected. "I don't suppose coolant is an option." Vera and Vicky look at each other, consternated.
"We seem to be out of stock."
Sounds like Ixion got there first. I wasn't really expecting it anyway. Just means I'll have to be quick. For more reasons than one. It's been so long since I had this kind of pain in my abdomen, I didn't at first recognize it. But changing into my flame suit, I confirm the blood on my thighs and let out what feels like my first full breath in days. Lee's alive. I'm not pregnant. And I'm going to wipe the floor with Ixion as I bleed.
"I'll get you some of my rags," Vera says at the sight of it, and breaks for the dorms at a run.
Ayla's in the centre of the courtyard, drinking from the fountain I used to play in with Duck. I won't risk sending her out of my sight, so instead of arming in the nests, we prepare here. I take a moment before saddling her up to hold her.
"Never, ever again."
She snorts in agreement and tucks her neck round me, pressing me to her scaly breast.
"You ready for this?"
Sparks flutter from her nostrils as her eyes flash.
Me too.
I wash Power's blood from my hands and face in the courtyard fountain, steeling myself at the sight.
After. You will feel after.
By the time Vera returns with a fistful of menstrual rags, I've started breaking my time prepping armor to double over the flower bed.
I'd forgotten how much I hate this.
Annie, you all right?
I'm cold sweating, probably feverish, and only feel intermittently better after dry heaving. But also, I'm pulling on a flame suit for the first time since returning to Kallipolis. I can handle cramps.
I am fantastic.
Vera holds out a woman's cuirass, bearing the entwined silver and gold circlets of the Guardians, and Vicky finds wing pins in the pile that she affixes to my shoulder. The wings of the Fourth Order. I press the bloody first rider badge Power saved for me into her hand. It's not quite time to put it back on. Have that ready for me when we get back. My breath catches as they pull the revolutionary armor over my head. A helmet tucked under one arm, I climb into the saddle. I strap boots into their stirrups, feeling the welcome reassurance of leather cinching tight. Vera pats my calf, and Vicky steps back to take us in and laugh aloud with hands stretched to the sky. Then I dig my heel into Ayla's side, and we're in the air at last.
40. Revolution's Daughter. Dealer. I'm at Ixion's elbow as we make our way from the throne room to the apartments where servants will be waiting with his dragon and his armor. Ever since I got back from Norcia, I've expected to be confronted about going missing for the night. I've steeled myself to come clean and say, just like Para did, you got me. I'm a peasant-loving traitor. I think I actually want it, but it becomes clear enough Ixion doesn't have an interrogation of me on the agenda. He's shaking with such fury that courtiers clear the corridors at the sight of him. I'll show her. I'll show them both. Them both. He's used a feminine plural. I don't understand until we enter Ixion's apartments and find a young man in Basilean yellow lounging in the parlor. He's a striking lack of chin. Sorry to keep you waiting, Your Highness, says Ixion, with a clipped bow. May I present Dilo Skyfish, Triarch Presumptive of the East? I have to take a slight detour this morning, but I hope we'll be able to reunite you with your dear sister as soon as my business is finished. Please, make yourself comfortable in the meantime. Of course, says Friedrich, in a flat and nasal dragon tongue. I don't intend for us to impose on your hospitality much longer. He offers a thin-lipped smile. I'm staring at the god heir, thinking of the coin I held in my palm in Griff's study. On the obverse, the silhouetted likeness of the face that now studies me without expression. And on the reverse, his Goliathan. If Friedrich is here, where is Azuleth? Ixion turns to me and does not register that I've stopped dead. Dilo, would you and Jephira be so kind as to join our honor guard? Of course. Ixion begins to pull on his flame suit.
Lee. The plan was to get Annie out on Ayla's back, whether or not she was found guilty, and not take on the Goliathan before. When it becomes apparent which way the verdict has gone, and criers begin to summon Kallipolans into the arena, I know where to find the resistance riders who will plant themselves to summon at the end of her match. In the aisle seats. Ixion waylaid the guardians in this arena once. Now it's time to return the favor. I glimpse leaflets poking out of pockets and bags as I join the throng making its way up the stone stairs. Thanks to the scar across my face, no one recognizes me. They've been staring at it so much, they haven't bothered looking closer at my face. Krissa and Kor, on the other hand, are distinctive for their decision to wear hoods in broad daylight.
You lot could try to be a bit less conspicuous, I mutter, taking the seat next to Krissa.
She adjusts her hood with a huff, but wisps of blonde are still spilling out. Kor leans round Krissa, smirking.
Been sung to by a muse recently, Lee?
He's got one of the leaflets rolled into a fist.
Careful! I've heard possession of that document is illegal.
Krissa takes the printing from Kor and swats me with it. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it, sitting in the arena where I'll never fly again. But here with Kor and Krissa, straining eyes for Annie, still high on the creative adrenaline of an all-nighter, I feel more myself than I've felt in a long time. And then the trumpets sound, and Antigone Suaela flies over the rim of the arena wall. She sits, sure in the saddle, her head high, her auburn hair blowing, the helmet tucked confidently under her arm as Ayla descends to the eyrie. She's alive, either unharmed or unharmed enough to fake it. The crowd begins to cheer and then take up the chant. First a draconym and then an epithet, the one I penned last night in a frenzy of ink and crumpled parchment in Lotiran's study as the words poured out. Antigone Suaela, Revolution's Daughter.
Annie. The skies billow with cumulus that drift like mountains on a spring wind. As the palace spreads below our wings, as the blue bowl of the sky lowers to join us, and wind whips the hair from my forehead, the beauty of the familiar sight takes my breath. In the arena below, swelling crowds fill the stands with colours, and their cheers rise up to greet us. On the eyrie, we are joined by Ixion Suaela. He glitters in Storm Scourge armour like a double of Lee, fury in his grey eyes and a sneer twisting his thin mouth. And, juxtaposed, the silver-tipped wings of Nita dwarf Ayla by half. But all either of us feel, looking up at them, is anticipation. We should have done this a long time ago. Gasps that aren't mine have drawn collectively across the stands. I look up to find Pytho's keep unfolding. Obazuth spreads her wings to launch. Her shadow darkens the stands as she circles them, and clover riders scatter from the ramparts like a flock of displaced birds. And the great dragon settles along the wall of the arena with a fold of her wings. The sun glows through the membranes like a tent roof. Her great head twists, cocks, and a single eye the size of a human head fixes on the scene below. Fixes on Ixion and me. She has gone completely still. The arena has gone completely silent. Ixion and I turn as one to look up at the palace box where Freyda observes. She stands unmoving, the breeze fluttering her short veil. A thin lacing of black veins twist down her neck. I think of Norcia, of Lee and his books, of the other half of the plan, and the fleet I'm banking on. Are they here? If they are, they aren't moving yet. Ixion and I both dismount. The servant approaches with a bucket to perform the ceremonial dousing. A memory flickers at the sight. Ixion Suaela above Kallipolis, sputtering. I lift my hand. The servant sees the gesture and does a double take.
You refuse the dousing?
We do. To refuse a dousing, to duel with sparked dragon fire, is to duel to the death.
in a suit without coolant. This would normally be suicide. But I know Ixion's secret. His face glows white under the shadow of Obizuth's wings. Lord Ixion, you may accept the terms or surrender your helmet. Ixion's gloved fingers tighten on his helmet. I'm smiling at him. All the while, Obizuth poises frozen over us.
We accept the terms, Ixion says through barely moving lips.
The servant lifts the dousing bucket for the crowd to see and empties it onto the ground. They are screaming their approval, screaming, I realize with a flood of surprise, my name. I make the final preparations as we ready for launch. In the days when Power trained me to spill over, this was the moment when he would have to insult me to provoke high emotion. When Lee and I sparred for First Rider, I used fury to open the connection. Negative emotions are usually the most readily available. But today, as I look into Ixion's grey eyes, as I listen to the sound of Kallipolin's cheering, the feeling that binds me to Ayla is less rage than triumph. I've got my boot in the stirrup when I feel a weight on my shoulder. Ixion has crossed the neutral space between us. His gloved hand is on my upper arm. His black hair glows red as it blocks the sun.
I just wanted to thank you.
Get your hand off me.
If we were doused,
Ixion says, his smiling face in shadow.
I'd have to stop at the third penalty. But now, I get to keep going for as long as I want.
Ayla begins to growl, her crest flaring. On the other side of the Eyrie, Nita's crest rises to meet hers. He looms over her. Ixion makes a point of removing one finger at a time from my shoulder. Ayla's growling rises to a menacing whine as he returns to Nita, her crest slowly lowering. It takes effort to turn my back on them. I throw my leg over Ayla's back, trying to shake off the lingering unease from Ixion's touch. What's his recourse? Aside from talk, he's still spark-forsaken. Ayla and I take to the air, minds locked. Positions are assumed. The crowd below stills. Roiling spring clouds clog the sky, hanging low over us like a high ceiling, and the wings of the great dragon surround us on all sides. But my lowered visor narrows my vision to the storm scourge and the boy opposite us whom we will destroy. The bell rings. Ayla and Nita surge toward each other, finally. Finally. This is what I'm here to do. Ayla and I don't usually spare time for showmanship, but today we allow ourselves a spiral as we advance, a flourish lightweight Aurelians can pull off where Ixion's storm scourge must maintain an unswerving trajectory to reach velocity. I can hear the crowd's admiring gasps below and feel that they're buoying me up. See, Kallipolis? This is how a lowborn rider flies. Then we're within range and our filled lungs fire. The glow of Ayla's flames burns my retinas. Ixion, Suanita, don't even try to dodge it or to make a shot themselves. They disappear within our blast. In a doused tournament, that would count as a kill shot. In today's arrangement, we'll keep going for as long as one of us can still get off the ground. It still surprises me when Ixion Suanita erupts from my own flames, screaming, and tackles us in a contact charge. A foul, if this were the kind of match that called them. Contact charges across breeds give unfair advantage to storm scourges. The one time I've dealt with one during a tournament, Power took us into cloud cover to tackle us unobserved. But this charge is in full sight of the arena below, and no whistle from the referee sounds. I don't expect it to. Ixion wants to make a show of flouting the rules. He wants to show he's above this. All of it. We'll just have to prove him wrong. We pinwheel, the weight of them careening us off balance, and the ground rushes toward us. The wings of both dragons beat the air in frantic tandem to maintain altitude. As Ayla struggles to free herself from his grasp, Nita slams his maw over the side of her wing and opens it against my leg. A paltry smattering of ash and sparks showers across my thigh. It would be an embarrassment to Ixion if anyone below could see it, but Ayla's wings provide cover and the spotter has no witness from the crowd below. It would be hardly enough heat to stop me on a training bout, except it falls on old wounds. Nita's aimed at my branded thigh. I hear my own shriek as the heat sets in. You see, Antigone? You're not the only one here who knows how to survive. Ayla's claws and fangs grow frenzied, and we tear out of Nita's grip and kick away from them. We surge out and upward to reset height. I'm wheezing now, fingers fumbling for coolant valves along my leg in the vain hope that the suit might have some left over. Nothing. Shake it off. As Nita resets opposite us, Ixion makes a show of opening every coolant valve on his flame suit, alleviating the burns he took from Ayla's dragonfire. Then he makes time to restock the suit with coolant he has strapped to his saddle. He's got whole canisters of it. Still, I can see how stiffly he moves. He's in pain. There's no way he'll face our fire head first a second time. Ready? I move to reset position without answering him. The bell rings again. We race toward them, letting the fire forge our path, a blazing wall of it, and again, to my disbelief, they barrel through it, enduring the full heat blast in order to make a second contact charge. This time we perform a flick roll to evade Nita's lunge, but not quite fast enough. His talons pierce Ayla's wings, exactly along the thin white scars from Edmund's mauling and the stitches she's still healing from. Ayla's turn to shriek. She attempts to yank free but only tears the punctures longer. And then Nita grips her by the neck with his jaws. His fangs are retracted. He's making a show of strength. He shakes her so hard I rattle in the saddle, and every bounce sends more pain searing through my wounded leg. Ayla twists but cannot free herself. We keep rattling until Nita flings us away. For a moment, before Ayla's wings catch on the wind, we freefall. Ixion's voice calls after us. We don't need anything as crude as flame. We already know every way to cause you pain. Ignore him. I'm humming it more to Ayla than myself. Her punctured wing beats the air overtime to match the uninjured one and raise us back to the reset height. The pain in my leg and her wing floods between us, clouding our senses. As we spiral on the updraft, her glance wanders down and she lets out a low whine that sends a chill down my neck. There are officials waiting at the floor of the arena with a chain link net, just like the one they threw over Palor. I can feel Ayla's thoughts scattering like 1,000 fireflies. Flickers of Palor beneath that net. Palor's tenderly nursing our shredded wings. Palor, gone. We're sinking toward the earth, her wings forgetting to pound the air. Ayla, no, I say, though suddenly my eyes are blurring with her loss. And then the despairing realization slides like sludge from her head to mine.
Ixion will keep ramming us with contact charges, ignoring our flames, and his coolant will last him longer than our shredding wings and waning energy will. His dragon's stamina will outmatch ours over and over, because thanks to the luck of birth and breeding, they are stronger and bigger and fitter. In the end, it won't matter whether the people cheer my name, or what an inspired jury decides, because this match isn't testing skill anymore. It's a test of brute strength. And in such a test, what advantage do we have? A smaller dragon and a scrawny girl, hungry and tired and in pain. Small. Scrawny. The word flickers like a thought on the breeze, fireflies shifting into memory. A note in my hand from the ministry, referring to my duties and suggesting I throw a match against a patrician boy with golden hair. A drillmaster's hand on my shoulder, reminding me of my place. That moment when I decided to hell with them and rose, leaving an iron grey storm scourge and its golden boy behind. Ramming through a door that had been locked because I was tired of waiting to be handed the keys. Tired of being afraid. Tired of holding myself in. When they don't give you the tools to win, you make your own. Ixion's right. Flames are crude. The earliest lessons of flying aren't about fire. They're about gravity. The oldest, surest weapon. I've only got to use it to my advantage. I slide a hand down Ayla's flank as we steady for the reset. She's heaving, poor girl, and I can see the ground through the tiny talon punctures to her wing. But she feels my excitement. Shall we give it one last go? She snaps her wings taut. Then the bell rings a third time, and Ayla and I do our favourite thing in the world. We rise. Fast as her beating wings will allow, ignoring the pain that shoots through the damaged membranes, straight into the sky as if we are leaving the earth behind. We clear Obazuth's mantling wings and surge past the circling clover riders. We are a cannonball that defies gravity, wings that defy the wind as we rip through the lowest clouds and rise higher. And because Ixion's no idiot, he tries to keep up with us. But it won't be enough. It's never enough. With a heavy storm scourge against an Aurelian's light frame. They rise, but for every meter they gain, we gain 3. Sprigs of ice creep across my visor. Ayla's gasps grow light. I'm holding my breath as we stall in air that is thin and cold enough to drown us. The searing cold offers numbing relief to my throbbing leg. The city spreads so far below, I could cover it with my palm. Pytho's keep lies half buried in cumulus. The island of Callipolis radiates from it. Lowlands rippling down to the Medean, highlands rising in jagged crags against the North Sea. Their white peaks are all that's left of winter, and green already tints the blackness of tilled fields. The River Fir, swollen and brown, overflows its banks. Below us, the great curve of Obizuth's wings encircle the arena. The flock of little clover riders hover above her, and Ixion Suanita has shrunk to a black insect we will pin to the earth. We dive. Pummeling our wings to hasten the force of gravity, transforming our little Aurelian into a meteor. Ixion Suanita swerves, darts, but our sights are on them. They assail us with the small sputtering fire Nita can muster. The heat penetrates my coolantless flame suit and scalds my torso,
and my still smarting thigh. But it isn't enough. Not nearly enough. We barrel through their ash and ram them with a contact charge of our own. This one is so aided by our momentum that they are the ones blown off course. We take them with us toward the earth, as if they were a fluttering doll, and they can't get out from beneath us. Because an Aurelian may be smaller, lighter, and weaker than a storm scourge, but not with gravity on her side. Nita's fangs gnash, fixing on whatever hold they can find. Ayla's wings, her side, my legs. Though we scream, we don't let go. And though he splutters, no more fire comes out. The city enlarges, filling our vision. The curving walls of the arena, draped by Obizuth's wings, rise to surround us like the arms of an old friend. The dusty floor of the arena hurtles toward us. The officials unrolling the chain-link net scatter and run. 2 meters from impact, Ayla shoves free of the other dragon with a single, sure kick. Ixionsu and Nita collides with the arena floor. The crack deafens us. The sound of the impact knocks the air from our lungs. When the dust clears, we find a crater. When I land on the edge of the crater, slice the straps of my stirrups, and dismount, the sound of my boots hitting the ground echoes on stone. I make my way down into the still sizzling impression. The body of Ixion is thrown on one side, a leg half pinned beneath his dragon. I think he must be dead until he moves. A shaking hand lifts the visor. Grey eyes find me. Ixion's body is broken, but the dragon's is still heaving and ready. We stand in front of Nita's moor, at range. Exposed in a flame suit without coolant, I remove my helmet. Give it your best shot. Nita fires, and ash sputters out. A choking cloud of it. Muttering rumbles through the crowds that watch us. The word I hear, or maybe just imagine I hear, spreading across the arena like fire. Spark forsaken. After all the dragonborn propaganda about the supremacy of their blood, after all their rigged winnowing tournaments to prove who deserves to ride, this is what they have to show for it. You want to try that again? Ixion screams. The dragon spews ash, billows of it, but no flames come out. The heat passes harmlessly over my unstocked flame suit. I'm smiling. Go on, he rasps. Finish it. Ayla stands behind me, poised to fire. You called for a tournament undoused, Ixion snarls, weighted beneath his dragon. Do it. I want it. I can taste it. I can smell his skin crackling, as mine did when he branded me. I can see the light going out of Nita's eyes, just as it did Palor's. My heart pounds with wanting it. I vowed once that I would. Who deserves death if not this boy, who let the horrors he saw as a child burn him from the inside out, and then inflicted those wounds on everyone and everything he touched? On me, on my country. Ayla's breath rattles behind me as she inhales, shallow and long, building the flames. But as she does, I feel the cool calm of memories. I have loved the son of those who killed my blood. I have erected monuments for my fallen oppressors and returned the bodies of my enemies to their kin. Ixion pounds his fist into Nita's hide, making the dragon wince. But no more fire comes out.
Antigone, you peasant bitch, finish it!
I clench my fists, the order coursing into Ayla, and she fires. It streams into the cloud-ridden sky, a pillar of flame for the arena to see, passing harmlessly over Ixion's head. Ixion's protests fall silent as he lifts his head to watch it turn to smoke above us. I took a vow to guide the city to justice. And justice has always been found by way of my mercy. The only way forward is to look into the face of the one who deserves my hatred and do better. Let Ixion be tried for his crimes, as I was by the system I have sworn to serve. A system that, albeit imperfectly, grants power and penalty based